The format of tonight's meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, the first of which will speak on the 10th tradition, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker to share on the 10th tradition is Frank.
Hello, my name is Frank. I'm an alcoholic. Long form of the 10th tradition. No AA group or member should ever, in such a way as to implicate AA, express any opinion on outside controversial issues, particularly those of politics, alcohol reform, or sectarian religion. The Alcoholics Anonymous groups oppose no one. Concerning such matters, they can express no views whatever. So first, I'd like to thank Randy for asking me to speak. It's always an honor and a privilege to speak at an AA meeting to do service, especially at my home group, especially on Tuesday, and especially to speak on a tradition, because for me that means that someone believed that I had something to say about AA and another thing that was not me. You know, I'm an expert on me, and I would love to talk to you about it all the time. So if you're interested, come see me after the meeting. This is about the 10th tradition. So I'm just a quick note for those that are new. This is a tradition talk. It's only 10 minutes. We're counting down from there. It's not very long. I'm a drunk. I got sober as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was the last thing that I tried and the first thing that worked. I tried a lot of other things, and the last place I wanted to be was AA. Turned out it was the best thing that ever happened to me, and everything in my life reverberates from that as a result. Trust that I believe that. If you don't yet, stick around and go through the work with somebody. So when I was new, I would come to an AA meeting and there would be a tradition talk, and I would think, I hear a lot of people saying, I went to AA and there was a tradition talk and I wanted to turn around and leave. That wasn't my experience. Mine was the opposite. I was very, very excited because they were finally going to stop talking about all the God stuff and the higher power thing, and I could finally listen to some brass tacks and learn about how this works, right? The spoiler alert is that it really has everything to do with a higher power, right? So this tradition talks about not expressing opinions. It's AA expressing any opinions. Overall, what this means to me is that there's nothing outside that's going to destroy AA. There's no article, there's no group, there's no individual or anything. It's going to happen from within inside if this was ever to be spoiled and to not exist anymore. I did a fair amount of research on this because I felt like that would be helpful to understand the tradition better and maybe to understand that, express that to you, to be able to be a better of service. So there's a group in the 1800s called the Washingtonians. They were a group of guys, six guys, started in a bar in Baltimore, and they wanted to get sober and not drink anymore. So they decided that sharing their experience, strength, and hope, and that they could find a higher power, and they could connect with each other, right? And this was 100 years before Bill and Bob got together. They started in 1840. Their numbers grew to 100,000 plus. They were grandstanders. They were got involved into a lot of other things. And by 1848, they were no longer. That was it. 8 years. Boom up and then crashing down, right? Next week, I'm going to have 9 years sober. So I've been sober longer than the Washingtonians existed to help people. I don't know what happened, and I don't even have a ton of time. I mean, all I have is today, right? But also, there's time involved, right? So what that means is that when we move away from something else, you know, we get involved in other things. We don't focus on a primary purpose. This ties into another tradition. They got involved in politics, temperance movement, alcohol reform, which has its own opinions about things. You know, AA doesn't have any opinion on that type of stuff. Turning over, second page. When I go into a detox or a rehab or a treatment facility or a jail or a prison to bring a meeting in, I read the preamble because that's what's asked of us to do in AA, right? And it says, in the part of the preamble says, AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, institution, organization, or does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes, right? A primary purpose, stay sober, blah, blah, blah. So it tells you what AA isn't. It doesn't tell you exactly what AA is in that, really, but it tells you that there's no opinion, right? So if there's no opinion, then there's no controversy. You can never tag AA with something. AA is not this, it's not that, right? It's not AA for this political party, it's not AA for this religious group, it's just AA. It has no opinion whatsoever. And it doesn't endorse or oppose any causes. Thank you so much. Right on time. Fantastic. So every once in a while I go to General Service with my sponsor and we'll go to the meeting there and we'll take the tour. And it's a great experience. I highly recommend it. They'll take you around the tour and they'll explain everything, brass tacks about how everything works, and it's a great way to see service really deep and steep in AA. And one of the things that they talk about in public information and just AA is if you call AA and you say, or you call General Service and you say, what's Alcoholics Anonymous opinion on September 11th, right? It's a pretty charged issue. Something, you know, big deal. I have an opinion. AA has no opinion. They will say, AA has no opinion on September 11th, but we can help you if you're interested in getting sober, right? So that's pretty incredible. They won't say anything about that. You know, I have a lot of opinions about things, but AA doesn't have opinions about things, right? So I try to temper that when I'm in a meeting, well, certainly speaking, but definitely in a meeting space and outside of a meeting, because the last thing I want to do is appear or be construed as ineffective to being able to help somebody. When I come to a meeting, there's a baseball team that I love, and I don't wear a hat or a shirt of that team. That's because that's my opinion to not wear that, because I don't want to be construed as something. Someone comes in that's new and sees that and says, oh, this is for that, or this is about that. Any excuse that I could use when I was new to come into AA, I was going to use it to walk out the door, or I was just going to stay and stew quietly by myself, right? So I don't want to do that. I want to be able to be of maximum service to somebody else that's still sick and suffering, right? This is a little bit of a mirror of the 10th step, restraint of pen and tongue, right? So if I don't say anything, really that's nothing is lost, you know, because I might be the only face that of Alcoholics Anonymous that someone sees, right? So what is that? What do I want that to look like? How do I want the 10th tradition to manifest in my life, right? What do I want that to look like? So when I'm at work, my primary purpose is to be an employee, right? I don't talk about politics. I don't talk about religion. I don't talk about controversial things at work because it doesn't have a place in my job, right? So that's how I can apply this tradition, because it's never bad for me to not say anything, right? It allows me to be of service, all inclusive, you know, never exclusive to other people. Tying in that third tradition, you know? And this way, this just doesn't implicate Alcoholics Anonymous into anything, and it doesn't get it caught up, so we can still have this. And this tradition seems simple by design, like, yes, of course. Like, when I was looking it up, I was like, of course, but, like, you know, I was reading about the Washingtonians and Bill's experience with that, and he said this is why they failed, because they got involved with other things, and it tore them apart, like property, prestige, all that stuff, just took them out. And, you know, he said that we would have gone through those same pitfalls if it hadn't been for them, to not learn from them and their experience. And that's just one of the great things about AA, is I can learn from people's experience here, and I'm just really so grateful that you're all here to help me stay sober one more day. Thanks very much.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Carly.
Hi, I'm Carly. I'm an alcoholic. Okay. I'm so grateful to be here. Rachel, thank you so much for asking me to speak. This is my home group. I'm a member of the Atlanta group. My sobriety date is December 6, 2013. I have a sponsor. Her name is Amelia. She is Amelia M. She is a member. She was a member of this home group, and she now lives in North Carolina, but I still call her every day. And I'm grateful beyond measure to be able to be of service to my home group. This is my home group, and to all the people in this room that have helped me stay sober one day at a time. And it really is an honor to do service, like Frank said, at any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, but particularly at my home group and on Tuesday night, for a couple of reasons. One reason being that it means I'm sober, which is great news, that I can be able to be of service, because that means I haven't drank today, and hopefully not for a little while. And it also means because I care so much. I have so much respect for this program, for the people in this room, for everything that's going on here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and specifically at the Atlanta group. So I hope that I am able to carry a message to the newcomer tonight, to connect with somebody who's maybe struggling or having a hard time, and share sort of my experience, strength, and hope with what has happened to me. So that being said, what happened to me, I drank. And I love drinking, which is part of the reason I'm here. If you love drinking, maybe you might have a seat here too. I love drinking. That is part of the reason why I think that I developed a problem. But I grew up, I have a wonderful family, wonderful upbringing. You know, you could look back and say some things happened to me that I wish hadn't happened. Some of those are outside issues. And that being said, you know, I have no reason to be an alcoholic other than that I am one. I spent a lot of time worrying about why I was an alcoholic or what might have made me an alcoholic. The answer really is that it doesn't really matter. And the truth is that I didn't really know what alcoholism was or like what an alcoholic was. I knew, you know, I didn't want to be one, and it wasn't appealing before I got here. It definitely wasn't in my, you know, like best laid plans to wind up in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and here I am. And like Frank mentioned, it's the best thing that ever happened to him. I also have that experience that certainly wasn't anything I was seeking, and definitely the best thing that I ever tried. So, I drank too much, and I also have struggled for a long time with anxiety and depression, and some other things like self-esteem, image, sexual orientation. A lot of those things might not sound like they have anything to do with alcohol, but for me they have a lot to do with alcoholism. For me, alcoholism is, alcoholism is a three-part illness that affects me in a physical allergy, a mental obsession, and a spiritual malady. So for those of you who are new, the physical allergy is that once I start drinking, I can't or don't want to stop, and I can't necessarily forecast like when I'm going to stop. For me, it was the kind of thing that if I started drinking, like, why would we stop drinking? Like, it really never occurred to me that there would be any reason not to. You know, if you've read the book, there's a line in the book that talks about alcoholics drink for the effect produced by alcohol. I vividly remember sitting in the pews at this meeting with my sponsor reading that line, and I turned to her and said, like, why else would you drink? And I genuinely mean that in my heart of hearts. Like, I'm not trying to be funny. It is funny to some of us who also are sick. But it is, there are people that don't drink like this. To me, alcohol was like a vehicle to, like, go somewhere else, and I used it as such. And then I also have a mental obsession. So I am allergic to alcohol. So, like, for instance, I'm allergic to walnuts, and I can't eat them, so I don't. But I don't think about walnuts all the time. I just carry Benadryl around and ask waiters and waitresses if there's nuts in my food, and then I move on with the rest of my life. That hasn't been my experience with alcohol. I still ask waiters and waitresses whether there's alcohol in my food, but I am allergic in a way that I don't stop thinking about it. It's something that bothers me. I want to think about when I'm going to get drunk. Wow. The last part of that is a spiritual malady. So this is the part that I really identify with, I think, the most today. So let me speak to that a little bit. So the spiritual malady, the best way I can describe it is sort of this God-sized hole that I really can't satiate, I can't fill with anything else. And believe me, I've tried, certainly with alcohol, definitely with relationships, definitely with money, love, anything you can imagine. And honestly, it just is like this insatiable sort of like bottomless pit. And the good news is that there's actually a solution to that problem, and it's contained in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which are outlined in this book, of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is where we get our name. And so, what happened to me is I drank and was trying some controlled drinking, like haha, for those of you who also did that. I was seeing a therapist at the time, and she asked me to try some controlled drinking because I would basically come in every few weeks and sort of like have, you know, lost it all again and couldn't really figure it out. And it was sort of like Russian roulette for me. Like sometimes I could go out and have a couple and it'd be cool. And sometimes I would go out, blackout, pee the bed, and lose my laptop. All the time. I was a blackout bedwetting alcoholic. Like, it was not a good look, and it was really embarrassing. So I say that because it's mortifying, and because hopefully somebody in the back or in the balcony may stay, because they also do that too and are mortified to admit that as well. But yeah, it's super embarrassing and also expensive and really inconvenient. But that was like a really obvious example of sort of like my life being unmanageable. So anyway, what actually brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous is that God-sized hole. I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know that I had a spiritual malady. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I had a particularly bad bender over Thanksgiving weekend in 2013. My dad drove me to the train station to send me back to the city, and he told me he was worried about me. And I love my parents. I love my family. My father's like my hero, and I adore him. And the fact that he was worried about me, I was just like so... it just like was such a gut punch that I couldn't ignore. And believe it or not, like honestly, my family drank like pretty hard. So like the fact that he was saying something kind of was like a wake up call of like, whoa, like it's really, you know, wow, this isn't something I'm gonna like cast aside. And I basically from that experience went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Like I don't know why the thought occurred to me that I would want to go, and today I identify that was my higher power. Basically, that was like my moment of grace. We all have them. We have windows here of opportunity, I believe, and they may be inches or seconds, and it's really our responsibility to kind of capitalize on them and help others to have our hand reached out when they're ready to capitalize on theirs. But, you know, there is no reason why I'm here and someone else isn't, other than that I got myself to a meeting and the people surrounded me, and I cried the entire time, and it was... I was just blubbering like a total loser. And I was so sad. I mean, I was really mourning the loss of like, you know, the book talks about like, we can't imagine our life with alcohol and we can't imagine our life without alcohol. Like I truly, truly in my heart of hearts as a 27-year-old who loves drinking more than anything, it was part of my ethos. Like I identified with being drunk and fun. Like those were my two like biggest personality traits, which is pretty sad. But truly, like I had no idea what like Carly meant without alcohol, and it was so terrifying. And so, the people enveloped me and wrapped their arms around me and gave me their phone number and told me to keep coming back and to call them. And I did, and I kept coming back. Oh my goodness, I kept coming back to different meetings and was sort of floating around for a little while and finally got connected in this home group because of the women that surrounded me here. And I would say that, you know, being able to have a home group, somebody that you're accountable to every day, checking in with, the women in this room have surrounded me with love in a way that I didn't know was possible. I definitely thought that going to Alcoholics Anonymous was like the end of my life, and it certainly has been just the beginning. And you know, today certainly there are things that I struggle with, whether it's financial insecurity, relationship concerns, you name it. You know, none of that stuff has gone away, but today I don't find it necessary to drink over them, and I have the tools that all of you in this room have helped to sort of guide me and shape me to be able to sort of tackle them one day at a time. So thanks for letting me share, and thank you for my sobriety.
Speaker tonight is Patty. everybody. My name is Patty, and I am a CIA, a Catholic Irish alcoholic. I want to thank Randy for asking me to speak, and I'm just so honored. And I want to thank Carly and Frank. You did an awesome job. And whenever I speak, I say a little prayer. I ask God to empty me of me and fill me with thee. So I have a home group. My home group is Baiting Hollow, the Hour of Power at exit 73 on the Long Island Expressway. Or the Long Island Depressway, whichever. I have a sponsor. Her name is Jane S. Who has a sponsor? I have sponsees. So I'm the class of 84, March 9th, 1984. I crawled in here and I stayed. Because the pain was great enough. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It's been the greatest gift in my life. It's the gift that keeps on giving. I want to thank my partners, my posse that came in with me, my girlfriend Liz and Roberta, my brother Patrick and his girlfriend Claire, because alcoholism is a family disease. It gallops in my family. Yeah. I'm one of nine children. I'm in the middle. So I really went crazy. And I had fun. I had fun. But by the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was beaten down. And I got on my knees, and I asked God for help. And I cried. You know, and if they would have told me to lick the floor when I came in here, I would have said, where do you want me to start? I'm so done. I can't do this anymore. So for all you newcomers that mentioned your name and you had the courage to say who you were and that you were an alcoholic, that's how it started for me. Never in my wildest dreams would I ever think I'd be standing here before you. With the amount of time that I have. So it's truly a gift. And I've been taught to polish the gift every day. Every single day. And they told me what to do when I got here. You know, because I had all the answers to the questions before you even asked the question. Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. Yeah. And yeah, but. You know, all those answers. But yet I knew nothing. You know, I came from a good family. And just to give you a little background, my two aunts were nuns. And my uncle was a priest. So there were masses being said for me, novenas being prayed, candles being lit. Yeah, because I was out of my mind from the get-go. I was born in Mercy Hospital, and when my mother was having me, she called the nurse, and the nurse said, that baby isn't coming. And out I came with no help from the doctors. And in those days, I was considered a free baby because you used to have to pay a delivery charge. And my mother always reminded me of that. So I was a free baby, but then I made up for it in the end. Yeah, with my alcoholism. So I came into the world, and it was all about me. Selfish and self-centered to the bone, you know. And so I grew up with that family, eight brothers and sisters. And here's the attitude. I wanted to be an only child. I wanted it to be all about me. You know, and I look at that today and I laugh. Because I love my family. You know. Some of us are in here, some of us aren't. Some are still experimenting. Yeah. But I'll tell you, Alcoholics Anonymous and God did for me what I could not do for myself. So I had that Catholic school upbringing, and it was wonderful for a gal like me. I needed that. And I couldn't wait to go to public school because I wanted to hang out with the public school kids because they smoked pot and drank and did whatever. And I wanted that. And you know, as an alcoholic, we get what we want. And my father wanted me to go to Catholic high school, and I said, I'm not going. He said, oh, yes, you are. You are going. I said to myself, oh, no, I'm not. And, you know, I got in a lot of trouble. You know, I did a lot of drugs. I have to tell you that. Because when you go to school, what do they have? Drugs. So I did a lot of drugs. So I got asked to leave the school, the Catholic school. I embarrassed my family, you know. As my mother would say, you know, we can laugh about it today, but it wasn't funny then. Because I was an embarrassment. No ifs, ands, or buts. So I got thrown out of school and or asked to leave and not come back. And I was excited because now I could go to public school. So I went to public school. I started in September, and I cut from September to January. And my poor parents, you know, my father would drive me to school and drop me off at the front. I'd go in the front door, go out the back door, usually get in a stolen car with my friends, go to the liquor store, go to the candy store and get some model airplanes, minus the model airplanes, and party. And party. Party like a rock star, so I thought. I was 15 years old, I got in a lot of trouble. I wound up in Jamaica court, being sentenced by a judge to 15 months in reform school. I was not a happy camper. And my attitude was, I'm not going. And they said, you're going. And they put me in the station wagon with no locks on the door so you can't get out. And they drove me upstate to this home with barbed wire fence. This is where you'll be living for the next 15 months, run by the nuns, the wonderful Good Shepherd nuns. I've made amends. Yeah. So I got in a lot of trouble up there, acted out. You know, I have the ism going on. And my parents were beside themselves, again, embarrassed. I was not the daughter that they wanted me to be, that they tried so hard, you know, to make me the way that everybody else was. I just couldn't do it. I had this hole in my soul, and I kept filling it with whatever was coming down the pike. It didn't matter to me. Because my drug of choice is more. I don't really care what's on the table. Mm-mm. I'm all in. Because that's the way I roll. I'm all in. So I went to that school, and I had to stay there, and I got in a lot of trouble, and I ran away, and I had my boyfriend come up and break me out, and it was a whole big scene. Yep. Ran around to the village, dyed my hair, was panhandling. Living from, as my parents would say, pillar to post. Thinking I had it going on. This is how I'm going to live the rest of my life, you know. And of course I was caught. And my parents came and they, you know, they didn't know what to do with me. So I just kept going. I said, you know, if you let me come home and be normal, I'll be normal. That was my thinking, and I really meant it for the moment. You know, we live in, as an alcoholic, I live in the moment. I'll be so good. But I couldn't because I had that hole in my soul. But I meant it. So I got home and I, you know, after 15 months, I had to, you know, catch up. So I got in a lot of trouble with a lot of shooting heroin. And, of course, I got caught. My parents committed me to Creedmoor. I'm a graduate of Creedmoor. And my father took me there, and I was put in a straitjacket, shot up with Thorazine. And my father would come and see me. Can I buy you anything? Can I bring you anything? And I would tell him, a tuna fish sandwich with well-done French fries. because that's what I want. I want what I want when I want it. They were beside themselves. When he came to see me, he was in shock. I told him I loved it there. I wanted to live there for the rest of my life because I met all my friends there. And they were there for the same reason. So I went about my business. I finally got out of there. I got arrested. Shocking. Got arrested. I was stealing mink coats. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Today I'm the proud owner of three. I just want to say that. Beyond Joie of the Streams. Who knew? Mm-hmm. Never quit before the miracle. So I got arrested and I went to jail. And that's where I kicked my habit. And the judge said, you're going to be going to a therapeutic community. And I said, oh no, I'm not. Guess what? I went. I didn't like it. I didn't do well. Because you get punished. And I was always doing the wrong thing. So I got punished. And then I just kept running away from there. And finally I reached a point, a little bit teachable, and they let me go out. And then you get drinking privileges. And I didn't really drink that much, but my drug of choice is more. So I got a job in a bar. And oh boy, fasten your seatbelt, because drinking is legal. You know, the drugs was obvious, it had to go, it had to be stopped, but the alcohol, whew, it's still. Anybody can do it. You could drink really anywhere. So that really took over in my life. And I went through a lot of years in the restaurant business. And it was, I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun. But then the fun started to have problems. I had problems with the fun. I had the boyfriends. I had the married men because I don't want to get married. I like to have married men because they have to go home at night. And I can continue to have my way. Because my drug of choice is more. I got to keep it going. I like to go to after hours. I'm nonstop. And then my girlfriend brings out some cocaine. And that was my express train into Alcoholics Anonymous. That was it. That was it. I was done. Done, done, done. And my bosses loved me. They loved me. They even took me to AA. They belonged there too, but they didn't stay. I did. Yeah. So like I said, by the time I got here, you know, it was over. The gig was up. I had enough. You know, and if you haven't had enough, you know, you haven't had enough. But when you've had enough, you can do this. You can do this. So I got the sponsor because they told me to. Woman in front of me, she looked pretty good. You know, I said, would you be my sponsor? She said, certainly. I went the next night. She was sitting behind me. She raised her hand. She drank. I was like, I didn't know sponsors drank. So this guy in the kitchen, Richie, he said, well, you got another drink, didn't you? Get another sponsor. Oh, yeah, they weren't sugarcoating anything in those days. I said, okay. So I went and I asked this other woman to be my sponsor. And she said, of course. So I went to the meeting and she was there on the other side and she raises her hand and she drank. I said, oh, my God, what kind of outfit is this? And the old-timers came and they pointed out who I should get. And thank God for the old-timers, because they were there to guide me. I was very blessed. God always protected me. You know, I shouldn't be standing here. I have a horror story, believe me. I shouldn't be standing here. I value every moment of every day. I really do. I don't drag my feet. I don't do lazy AA. I didn't do lazy drinking. I don't do lazy AA. I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to 3 and 4 meetings a day. That's how I got sober. Yeah. Pass the book. Read the book. I couldn't read the book. All I could do was cry. I had so much shame. By the time I got here, I was a maniac. I was an absolute maniac. I had no self-esteem. I had no self-worth. I had no conscience. I had no dignity. I had nothing going for me. I was on the minus column of every area of my life. Today, my life is filled to the brim. You people taught me to live a responsible life. You told me to do things that I didn't want to do, and I did them. That was amazing. You told me to go get my high school diploma. I don't want to do that, but I did it. You showed me how to fill out the applications, and you told me to make a copy and put it in your pocketbook. I thought, oh, these people are brilliant. So I went off and I got my GED. And then they told me, you'll go to college. I said, I don't want to go to college. Get the application. We'll help you fill it out. I filled it out with the help of them. I got my associates. I got my bachelor's. I got my master's. Never putting AA on the back burner. Ever. AA was always front and center. Like I said, I always had a commitment, a sponsor, and a home group. So I got all those degrees. I did a lot of service. I'm still not without. I always have a commitment. I still have a commitment. So I did the jail for about 6 years, the Riverhead Jail. And then I graduated Stony Brook with my master's degree. I wound up working at the jail as a social worker. So I went from working behind the bar to working behind bars. How great is that? How great is that? God again did for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know, that hole in my soul was filled to the max. It's still filled. My cup runneth over because of God and Alcoholics Anonymous. You can't be around it. You got to be all in. That's the way I was. Half measures avails us nothing. I never, like, sipped a drink and left it. Wasn't my story. I'm a blackout drinker. I'm crazy. Twisted sister. The head starts spinning. The horns come out. I don't know what you said to me, but you pissed me off. And I'm going for it, you know. My nickname was Crash Kelly. I had a lot of car accidents. Yeah. Yeah. Did all my Christmas shopping in the bar. You know how it goes. You know. How much do you need? You know, cash girl. I learned how to have a checking account. I blow my own mind. I just do. I can't believe my life. You know, if you stay here and you get in with the crowd, you know, the in crowd, not the out crowd. It's an inside job. You go on retreats. I love retreats. I do all the things that I was taught to do, and I ask my sponsees to do them. They look at me like I have three heads. I don't care, because I'll tell you the truth, because you will die if you don't do this. Yeah. We used to have this Dr. Agora. He used to say, suffer well, and I would be like, oh, my God. I don't want to suffer. I was killing myself with alcohol. Killing myself. I really didn't care what you were offering me. I drank anything. It didn't matter. I didn't even like the taste of it. I drank it anyway. That's how sick I was. Today, that's just unacceptable. Unacceptable. I can go into a crowded bar today, if I'm at a party. God took that from me. He took that obsession from me. Yeah. And if he did it for me, why wouldn't he do it for you? You know, this is an equal opportunity. We all get the same 24 hours. What you do with it is up to you. Because there's a lot of drama in AA. I see it all the time. Change your seat, honey. Change your seat. And those relationships, oh boy. Hang on to your seat. You know what that stands for. Really exciting love affair turns into outrageous nightmare. Sobriety hangs in peril. Would you like a date? You know, I came here to get sober. Everything else is gravy. This is the most important thing in my life. It's not the only thing in my life. I have a full life. Filled to the brim. But it's the most important thing in my life. Because I hear about the people. You know, I was told early on to the newcomer, you're like a frozen chicken. You have to sit here and defrost. It takes years. I want to go in the microwave. I want to be all better yesterday. Slow and steady wins the race. That's the deal. You know, if God brings you to it, He'll always bring you through it. He's the boss, I'm the horse, I gotta giddy up. Wherever He takes me, I must go. Yeah. I tell my sponsees all the time, read that book, study that book. The answers are all in the book. We're not unique. We are not unique. As it says in the book, it's a design for living. Who knew? Because I felt that. I always say this too. My two favorite words, incomprehensible demoralization. Bingo, I won the lottery. Because that's how I felt. That's what alcohol did for me. Yeah. Doesn't do me anymore. It's not my master. Yeah. God is my master. Yeah. Yeah. And all you people loved me back to health. So all you beginners, the ones that had the courage, like I said, to raise your hand, stay. This is what was told to me. Allow us to love you back to health. Because it was done for me. And if you're not getting that love, go get it. Because we know the difference. We know the difference. And it's very, very important. I was loved back to health. But I had to make that commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I have a lot of evidence. My commitments, I just never kept any of them. But when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, God opened my ears. It's that amazing grace. It continues to blow my mind. I got married in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was never getting married. Why would I get married? I got married to a beautiful man. We're happily married today, 26 years. And I never cheated on him. Blows my mind. And I love him, and I still love him. Yeah. He still opens the car door for me. I met him in Alcoholics Anonymous. Who knew? So, ladies and gentlemen, you will get all that's coming to you. It just takes time. Be patient with yourself. Patience and tolerance. All the things that I've learned about myself. Wow. You know, like I said, it's the gift that keeps on giving. God loves us so much. He interrupted my death because I was killing myself. And if any of you identify with that, you're in the right place. You're in with the right people. And again, God will take care of you. Because it tells you that. Find God now. Yeah. Clean house and help others. But it takes time. Things I must earn. Make the commitment. Because you're worth it. Allow yourself to be loved back to health. There's a lot of people in here who can give you that gift and show you the right way. You know, because I was always going the wrong way, down the wrong street, in the wrong car, with the wrong people, at the wrong time. You know? And since I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous, my life has been beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And I'll just tell you, you know, so in sobriety, I've lost two brothers that I love. I was able to be there for them. My mother, my beautiful mother, who chose to come and live with me. What? After all that. She used to come and hear me talk at the AA meetings. And Roberta would say, oh, Mrs. K, she really wasn't like that, was she? And my mother would be like, she loved Alcoholics Anonymous. And she came to live with me, and I became her nurse. And she used to tell me I was the best nurse. I'd say, Mama, I'm a social worker. I'm not a nurse. She'd say, you're the best nurse. And here I was, doing for her, taking care of her. She was like my baby. She died in my arms because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was sober, I was able to be there, and I was present. What a gift. I could never repay Alcoholics Anonymous for that beautiful gift. My father, he never got to see that, but I know he's looking down. So these are the gifts that you come, you stay, you watch other people go through it. Because I didn't know how to do any of this. You know, we're big Irish family. We go to the bar, we drink, then we go back to the wake, you know, and then everybody does whatever, and who's not talking to who, and you know the deal. I don't live like that anymore. So I love my life. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And if nobody told you today, I love each and every one of you. Thank you, and God bless you.